Welcome back to part two of The Townships at 12. If you're just joining me, I'm your host, Maureen Dillon Teasdale, and you're listening to The Cube, CJMQ 88.9 FM, here in The Townships. In the second part of today's show, I will be continuing my interview with Jackie Foster, a writer from Sutton, here in The Townships. I will also have some health news and some more music. We will start the second half of the show with a song called Escape Door, and it's by the Canadian band called The Arkells.
September sun at 6 p.m. The bricks look pink and violet. You said if life was different, you said you'd wanna live right here. Famous and anonymous, a cafe dreaming starlit. We both wanted none of it, we can't help but follow it. Canal Street didn't solve the problem, I think it might have started it. Now if you need to come, come on in, we can call it now. If you're giving up your heart, give it all up, honey, like we're all in. Walk through the door, no turning back, you can't deny. Held my hand, I asked you, what's the asking price? Now if you need a call, come on in, we can call it now. If you're giving up your heart, give it all up, honey, like all in. Walk through the door, not turning back, you can't deny.
Continue with my interview with Jackie Foster, a writer. She belongs to two writing groups. She's located in Sutton here in the townships. What role do you think storytelling plays in understanding our own lives?
My mother was a storyteller, and I remember she was a single mom, and I was when I was little, we would bounce around town in her little Volkswagen Beetlebug, and she would tell me stories of when she was a little girl, or she would tell me fables. And or she would tell me the plot of a book she was reading, but she was always telling me stories. And I think it's a way of connecting. It's a way of opening up discussion, questions, of teaching values, of talking about what's right and wrong. And so I think that writing is a way that we tell stories. Some of them are true and some of them aren't, but again, it opens up wonderful avenues of discussion and exchange.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Are you working on anything new at the moment?
You know, I really do care about education, and I care about the school system. I care about the kids. And when they're misbehaving, I can't help but wonder what I can do differently to engage them. Not, you know, what's wrong with the kid, but what can I still do? I still have there are still many possibilities, and what can I do differently?
Mm-hmm. Are you teaching now at the moment?
No, I have retired from teaching officially because we moved to Sutton during the pandemic, and what I ended up with was a lot of teaching online, which is great if you're a solitary kind of person, but not for me. I didn't want to be teaching on Zoom, even though I still love the students. I really need the in-person contact. So now I'm working full-time running the library.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I love it. I'm lucky. I've been very lucky to have two careers that I just absolutely love.
That is definitely very fulfilling. That's wonderful. Where can listeners find your work or follow your writing? Anywhere?
Well, there are two. I've got two, thanks to a group called Right Here, Right Now, WRITE, Right Here, and then WRITE, Right Now. I've been published in two anthologies, one called Connections in a Flash, and the most recent one is Everyday Resistance. And that one, well, both of them are available on Amazon, but they're connections. I'm very proud to be published alongside some very, very talented writers. And so it gives me some credibility, makes me feel validated in my efforts. I have a piece that I would love to read if you would allow me.
Oh, certainly.
That is, this one is fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly meaningful to me, if you would allow.
Certainly. Go ahead.
It's called The Moment. A loud knocking jolts me from slumber. Michelle snores quietly. I throw back the covers, pull on my oversized robe, and lumber down the stairs. The banging turns to hammering. I fumble with the lock and yank the door open. What took you so long, baby? My father pushes past me into the tiny foyer at the front of our little cottage, where we keep our skis, poles, boots, and helmets. The night draft rustles my nightie, chills my ankles. He passes through the French door into our sitting room, shrugs off his jacket, tosses it onto the nearest lounger. What are you staring at? Got anything to drink in this joint? I'm parched. He sits down on top of his coat, wriggling to get comfortable, rubbing his fingers together in anticipation. Dad? I lean limply in the doorway, transfixed by the apparition before me. It's really him. His brute aftershave hovers. Dad? How? He smiles, places his handsome hands on his knees. I run my fingers through my hair, rub my palms down my face. Dad? What? I kick the door closed behind me, then reach over and switch on the nearest lamp. Weak light illuminates the space between us. I thought I'd stop by and say hello. It's been a long time. You happy to see your old man? Quit staring at me and get me a drink, would you? Bourbon or whiskey if you have it. Or a beer, whatever. Beggars can't be choosers. I pad over to where he sits and slowly, so slowly, reach out a tentative hand toward his cheek. I shiver with the chill he brought in with him as he swats me away and rolls his gorgeous eyes. Oh, Phoebe, quit being so dramatic, you silly Arsia. He looks up and down around the cozy room, his gaze setting finally on me. You're looking good. A lot rounder than I remember, just like your mother. Dad, I was a 17-year-old kid the last time you saw me. That was more than 40 years ago. But you look just the same. I perch on the end of the sofa, knees pointing in his direction, examining every inch of the man who was my father, searching for some explanation as to how he is here, sitting in my living room in the middle of the night, 42 years after his funeral. Anyway, what's new with you? Are you married? Any kids? Nice house you got. But why'd you have to move all the way out here? Never mind. Be a good girl. Get your old father a shot of rye. Canadian Club if you have it. I'm not particular. Dad, it's the middle of the night, almost morning. I'll put the tea on. I rise, make my way over to the kitchen sink, reach for the tap and kettle at the same time. Just like your mother. Try and tell me what to do. Did I say I want a cup of tea? No, I want a drink, not tea. Where's your liquor cabinet? I'll get it myself. This is it. This is the moment I have fantasized about for 42 years. I turn off the tap, return the kettle to its base. I cross my arms and lean back on the counter to face the man who terrorized my family, who scared me, who bullied me and shamed me. The man who repeatedly made me feel that I was damaged, inferior, a disappointment. He loved me, he said, but his volatile actions and belittling attacks confused me. I loved him, but I craved an affectionate, gentle, kind, wise father, not this bombastic, frightening ogre. No, Dad. No. Heaven knows that worked when I was a kid. But your shouting does not intimidate me anymore. I have grown, Dad. I grieved you because I loved you, and I have grieved the father I wished I had. You cannot come here now after all this time and expect to find the same petrified child you last knew. You no longer have permission to hurt me. I expect him to rage, to swear, and argue, and spit, and kick, and knock things about. But I've just realized that this is my moment, and he doesn't get to be an asshole anymore. After all this time, in my house, on my time, he doesn't get to be a tyrant. Not to me. Not anymore. My father frowned, jaw clenched, hunched forward, staring at the floor, fingers splayed on his knees, a demeanor that signaled imminent fury. I unclench my arms, fist my hands, stand up straight, prepare for assault. But not this time. This time he gets to his feet, shrugs, glances at me warily, his fabulous blue eyes more soulful than I have ever seen them. He collects his jacket from the chair, tosses it over his shoulder, turns away from me and walks towards the front door. Dad? I take a few steps to follow him, reach for the wall for support. Dad? Why? Why did you come here? Tonight, why did you come? He keeps walking, passes through our tiny foyer, opens the front door, then stops, his beautiful hand on the doorknob, and speaks to the dawning light outdoors. Because, Bibi, you needed me to come. You have needed this moment for a very long time. After all these years, this moment is all I have to give you. And then he is gone.
Very interesting story, obviously, based on your childhood.
It is. It's entirely fiction, obviously, but the sentiment is real. And when I was writing it, at the point where he yells at me, I was going somewhere completely different as I was writing. And then I actually wrote this. This is the moment. This is the time. This is where I get to rewrite the script. And it was such a cathartic moment. I was actually writing it, that I was changing, and I really had fantasized my entire life. I wonder what kind of relationship we would have had as adults if he hadn't died when I was, you know, I had just turned 18. I had seen him the last time I was 17. And he had always been very bullying and very intimidating to me. And so I always wondered, because I've grown into a quite a strong woman, and I wondered, you know, what kind of relationship would we have had as adults? And this piece allowed me to stop wondering. I wrote it. I wrote the piece. I wrote the meeting, and I didn't know where I was going with it, but I loved where it ended up.
Mm-hmm. Very therapeutic for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't have to wonder anymore. Now I know. I would have stood up to him and it would have felt great. And he would have understood. That is the way I've decided to rewrite it, that he would have actually understood.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Okay, very interesting and very therapeutic, okay? What advice would you give to someone who has a story to tell but doesn't know where to begin?
Oh, I just love that question. Just write it. Just first tell it. And if you're not comfortable telling it, then just write it. And really don't care. Don't worry about grammar and spelling and vocabulary. None of that is important. What's really important is that you are able to actually tell your story. There are so many really good books of collections of writing by people who are completely disenfranchised, marginalized, prisoners, who are guided to tell their story. They're guided to tell their story by somebody who just tells them, look, don't worry about the format, just tell the story and we can work on the format later. That doesn't matter. And it's just so poignant, so touching, and so revelatory. These people who don't have never had a voice, you know, who may have been victims of their own background and upbringing and end up, you know, in really dire situations, they've never really had a voice. They've been victims their entire life. And so writing and taking control of the narrative allows for some measure of control.
Mm-hmm. Such an important message. What does writing give you that nothing else quite does?
Release. In my case, writing has always been a release when something is too strong and I don't know where to go with it. I don't know. It helps me also to gain perspective, and I'm always looking for perspective. When situations are difficult, challenging, it just has always been a reflex for me to write as a child as well. And it has always been, you know, get it out on paper and then you can sort through it later. And sometimes by writing, I discover an element that I hadn't thought of. I think writing is one of those things that even if you feel you have no talent for it, you can do it anyway. I can't play the piano, and even if I want to, I still can't play the piano. But if you think you don't have any talent for writing, you can still write, and nobody has to see it or read it except you. But there's always the possibility.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful message. Anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't covered yet, Jackie?
No, just that I absolutely embrace the writing community in Knowlton and in Sutton, who have allowed me, and with Right Here, Right Now, Jan Draper, who heads up Right Here, Right Now, has been incredibly supportive and encouraging. You know, when you don't think that you have the skill or the talent, or you've never really considered yourself. I've never really considered myself to have anything worthwhile reading or hearing, and to be told that it is interesting and it is worth listening to and it is worth telling, it lends credibility to the endeavor, and I'm very grateful.
I've had a wonderful time talking to you. Very interesting and definitely an eye-opener. We've been talking with Jackie Foster, writer from Sutton. So thanks very much, Jackie, and all the best on your writing.
Well, thank you so much. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye.
And next up, we have some health news for you here on the Townships at 12. Now, in today's busy world, many of us eat on the run. standing at the kitchen counter, in the car, in front of a screen, or while rushing from one task to the next. But taking time to eat our meals calmly and without stress is one of the simplest things we can do for our health. When we eat in a relaxed state, our bodies digest food more efficiently. Digestion actually begins before the first bite, with a sight, smell, and anticipation of food triggering digestive enzymes. But when we're stressed, our body switches into fight or flight mode, and digestion slows down. This can lead to bloating, indigestion, heartburn, and discomfort. Eating slowly also helps us tune into our body's natural hunger and fullness signals. It takes about 20 minutes for the brain to register that we've had enough to eat. When meals are rushed, it's easy to overeat without realizing it. There's also a mental health benefit. Sitting down for a meal, even for just 15 or 20 quiet minutes, can become a pause in the day, a chance to reset, breathe, and enjoy nourishment, rather than treating food as just another task. If possible, try putting away the phone, turning off the television, sitting at a table, and really tasting your meal. Notice the flavors, textures, and the simple act of feeding yourself well. Good nutrition isn't only about what we eat, it's also about how we eat. So today's health reminder is this: give yourself permission to slow down at mealtime. Your body and your mind will thank you for it. And that's our health news today on the Townships at 12. I would like to thank my guest on the show today, writer Jackie Foster from Sutton. And if you belong to a nonprofit organization and you have an activity coming up, I would be more than happy to announce the event for you. And if you have an idea for an interview also, please email me at cjmqnews@gmail.com. The Thursday show is repeated at noon on Friday, and it will be up on our website later today. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will close with the song called Days I Remember. It's by Dufresne. You've been listening to the Townships at 12 here on the Cube, CJMQ 88.9 FM, the voice of the townships.
Dragons crept inside.